the conference committee will come to order. Let's see. We have a couple of cleanup amendments. One is an 839 amendment. This is just in regards to some language in the bill that we want to hand these out. That is in reference to the Hibbing and Chisholm stuff and the sanitary sewer district. And it just makes everything work, right?
I'll move by the 839.
Representative Rooker, we have moved the 839 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Adopt it. We have, where's the other one?
Which one are you going to do?
Representative Gunther, you have a couple of deed amendments, I think?
Yes, I'd like to have A41 here first. That would make the other one unnecessary.
One will make the other one unnecessary, regardless of which one we put on.
Same into that. Chairman and members, basically this amendment takes that unemployment, automatic unemployment for counties into the work unemployment insurance advisory council and allows them to consider the subject and come up with the right recommendation. Certainly we discussed last time that we have a Trade Adjustment Act the way it's written. In a bill, state money comes first. We don't want that to happen. We all know that. So I think this would be a good solution to the problem, and I think they're represented from both sides very, very well. And I'm sure it would make the governor feel much more likely to sign the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Rivera.
So, Representative Gunther, does this get rid of the it's sad unemployment for this, then, when you're deleting everything?
No.
Well, Mr. Nelson has been working with us, and I was told that if we take out the certain thing, but it not delete the whole thing, that they supported it, the Department of Employment and Economic Development. So does the next amendment do that, then? So I would ask that you vote no on the A41 and do the A40.
You're easy.
I'm a realist. Representative Gunther, you know, boy, we've been cooperating all along, and every single time we change the program, it's because we're getting recommendations from DEED, and that it'll work if we do it this way, and it'll work if we do it that way, and so. I think we're.
I'll pull this amendment.
Okay, pull this one. Yeah, good idea.
And I move the A40 amendment. Satisfy both sides better.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is this the language then that Mr. Nelson talked with about last evening?
Yes.
Nelson? It is? The A40 amendment is the language he talked to us about last evening. And if you want. Then you've been indicating that Department of Employment and Economic Development is okay with it if we did this. So is that the case then? I think it's your language.
Yes. Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the Director of Unemployment Insurance Legal Affairs for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The administration's position is that prefer that the extension not go into effect and that the issue be studied. However, we'll support Amendment A40.
Thank you.
There are issues with this whole program because it's a substantial change in how the whole program ought to be looked at in a lot of different ways. But we believe the study gets at it, and the A40 amendment puts the extension in place for a year and about a half, and then it sunsets. So it gives the legislature time to come back and revisit the issue next session after the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council has...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Nelson, and then I support the Gunther Amendment.
Okay. When we said delete everything, what are we deleting? Yeah, in the A40.
The working document.
So that's fine.
So what are we deleting? We delete everything. Okay. All right. Okay, so this gives us a sunset on the program of June 30th, 2009. And based on that information, anybody who gets an extension will only qualify for one. So that's a really big compromise from the way it all started out. And so, and plus we have a advisory council that's trying to figure out if there's a better way to do this. Is that correct? Okay. And Representative Gunther moves the A40 amendment. Any discussion?
So just so I understand it, so now, regardless of what the federal government does with their unemployment benefits, that somebody would still qualify between now and June 30th, 2009, the state would be required to pay the unemployment benefits, and following this, or in addition to, we're going to study the issue. Is that...
Well, only if, Mr. Chair, only if the unemployment rate is over a certain
right.
percentage, and it was three colonies we thought, and maybe one of them, I'm not sure if it even qualifies now, and but maybe Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the bottom, the statute... probably misspoke last year. The statute, I believe, in 268.125 subdivision 5 does in fact provide that state law does not allow an individual to get both. But the problem is federal law and the way that the current legislation pending in Washington is written, it would require any state benefits to be paid first, so state law couldn't. So you'd have a conflict between the two. We would certainly argue with the United States Department of Labor that we should pay federal benefits first. I just tried to point out that it's an issue that someone should be aware of. The current state law would not allow a person to get both, but federal law may trump that.
Based on what you're saying, the feds are thinking about passing a law that says you got to take state benefits first anyway, so we can't pass a law that says, no, we won't. Correct.
Exactly.
Okay, Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nelson, what is the likelihood of this happening in the next year and a half?
What?
Where are these three counties
at? Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, the three counties will, in fact, get this extension. Now, you know, we don't know what, because it's retroactive to January 1st, 08, so it will be in effect. Now, whether it blinks off in those counties depends on whether the unemployment rate in those counties falls faster than the state average or vice versa. More counties could blink on, depending upon if the unemployment rate in those counties grew faster than the state unemployment rate or actually didn't fall as fast as the state unemployment rate. So it depends on a variety of factors, but all things being equal currently, three counties would qualify. A total of 461 people would currently qualify.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Gunther, your motion on the A40 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Let's see. What?
Senator Higgins. Senator Higgins loan. Are we foreclosure bill?
Okay. Do you want to explain it? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, we are. We inadvertently, some language from the that was in the budget bill that we intended to go into the policy bill on page R49, section 31. This is the assistance to prevent mortgage foreclosures. This was a Senator Higgins bill.
Oh, in fact, this is actually very non-controversial, if I remember correctly. It's just something that we can do already, and it's just a better way of doing it from what I remember. So,
Chair, I'll move section 31 for Senator Higgins if I don't have to move her.
Representative Wood Gravina moves section 31 side by side on page R49. Any discussion? If not, all in favor, please let us know. Aye.
Aye.
Adopted. What else do we have?
Chair, I have an A21, which I think our outstate will move around, and while it's being passed out, I'll explain it. Currently, there's this in statute. There's a provision that allows steel workers to work on and just repair, not install, but repair their fire protection systems in the mines. Because of law changes over the years, and this was, I remember when former Representative Begich did this, but because of law changes, their fire protection is over what's considered low pressure. I've talked to the steam fitters, the plumbers, the sprinklers, and public safety assistant commissioner, and they're all okay with this language.
Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, Representative Rukavina moves the A21 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anything else?
We have to adopt the advisory commission side by side.
Is that just a verbal amendment? And what does it say?
Higgins doesn't want it.
are we adopting all of it? Okay, and then this is the one section that we said we wanted to leave out of section 38 on the side-by-side on page R43 is instructions for the reviser, so it's okay with everybody as far as they know. So, Rukavina moves section 38, the revised instruction on page R43, side by side. Any discussion? There's none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Chair, I gave Mr. O'Rourke an amendment. I think it was numbered 826. Did that get copied for the committee?
Can you read more?
Coming around. This is the amendment. Members, if you remember, House members, we had a hearing on the Barber Cosmetology Board, and it was brought up during the committee that the workforce development, several of them were not allowing people to go to barber or cosmetology school, and I figured the way I look, I just can't afford to not have a barber. So, you know, what this says at the end is that this product shall not restrict training in personal services or other such industries. I had an amendment drafted for the Budget Committee yesterday that specified a dollar amount. I don't think he'd like that. So this just clarifies that, you know, if somebody gets laid off from a job and they want to go to barber or cosmetology school, that it allows them to get workforce development funds for it.
I think this is a good amendment, but I'd like to also refresh your memory that one of the things we think we should have done is make sure that the barbers and the cosmetologists meet separately on the same day. In other words, each one has their own board. Each board will meet separately. That way there will be no one person taking a superior role. Don't want that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think at this time we can solve it this year, and I think we just got to... I was going to give you some per diem during the interim and let you work on that. Because I saw that Cadillac in the parking lot down by Junkies, and I figured you might need a little cash to...
My old Cadillac?
You got a Cadillac?
I got a 2001 Cadillac. I bought from my father-in-law. He felt sorry for me for my 99 years.
What kind of gas mileage did you get? Some people lie about their gas mileage. Here you go. I got this 7-ton Cadillac. I get 28.5 miles per gallon in the city. You can't do that.
See, I've been on the road all the time.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzen, I downsized from a Buick LeSabre, which I liked. You know, it was an old person's car. I got a free box of Depends when I bought it. But anyway, I downsized to a Buick LaCrosse, smaller engine, thinking, I get 4 miles to the gallon less. So I'll brag about how I don't get any gas mileage. I went from 28 miles to the gallon to 24.
I got it. Well, instead of setting your speed control at 95, put it at about 80, and you'll get better gas mileage. What do you get in that big thing of yours?
But we're not,
Senator, we had Cadillacs in the past. Think of the ride.
Oh, I love them. In fact, I got about 25 or 26 miles an
hour. Okay. Mr. Chair, I've got the amendment out here.
But I had a hard time going to the Malibu, just so you know. But it gets about 35 miles to the gallon. So that isn't bad.
You're adding 10 at each
I have the 826 amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'm going to move the 826 amendment. Any further discussion on automobile? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying
aye.
We have another one. The Senator has my glasses. The A14 amendment. Mr. Coleman, you're okay with this A14 amendment, right? Do we have an A14 amendment to handle?
Yes, go on, sorry.
You want to look again?
Mr. Chair, is this relating to Senator Gibbles?
Yes.
And can we find out what's going on with the amendment?
Mr. Coleman? Give him a copy of the amendment, too, please.
But what are the two instructions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, there's several minor things. When talking about the intent of the language as far as dedicating zones, it was worded, had to be commercial, housing, and pedestrian pleasant in order to qualify. I asked them, did they intend to include all those? Because if you only had commercial and housing, but no pedestrian, or just commercial, it wouldn't be eligible. And they said that wasn't the intent. So they changed that to put an or in there instead of an and, so it can include these things. The second thing is I never ran across any term relating to pleasant pedestrian walkways or things like that, but pedestrian friendly seems to be a word that's more commonly used, maybe a term of art that's at least something acceptable and understood, I guess, in the transportation planning area. So they changed that phrase. And then the description of project is part of the application, so it modifies that. And the rest is all renumbering that section. And then the issue of negotiating interest rates. We didn't want to spend 2 years writing rules to develop criteria for negotiating interest rates, so we just plugged in a 2%, make it easy. And that's something the legislature can look at when they appropriate money for this program on an annual basis, if that's still reflective of a reasonable subsidy given the market conditions. And then it was the way it was written is supposed to be cash up front based on plans, and I said that's too much of leeway and too potential for bad business practices, so we changed that to disperse loan proceeds on a cash needs basis and actually on cost incurred later down. So those are the major changes in the bill.
Mr. Chair, just one question, and on the line 1.20, when you plugged in the interest rate figure, is that typical of PFA's?
Our non-state revolving loan fund. It is. I mean, those programs, we wrote rules on how to calculate interest rates based on a lot of factors, but the other programs, we try to plug in a fixed rate, so it's easy to understand, and everybody knows what the game rules are.
Okay. Did somebody move the amendment?
Representative Murphy moved the A14 amendment. I talked to Senator Dibble, and he's fine with it also. So, any further discussion, Senator Bonner?
Mr. Chair, sorry, but I'm trying to see where these changes fit, and it doesn't correspond when it says...
Probably in the article that we put together.
Yeah,
they're in that working...
In that working article?
Yeah. I can share a copy with Senator.
All right, okay.
We don't have any problems.
That's
got the same thing.
I talked to Senator Dibble earlier today.
And he was fine with it? Okay.
And most of these things are just, all those deletes, are those are just changing references from who's for your...
Okay.
For your four. Dan, Representative Murphy's amendment, E14, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries. What do you got? Request communication stuff? Is that it?
That's it.
I have two amendments. You know, we heard from the governor's office on workplace communications that there was a preemption problem. And so I thought the best way to take care of the preemption problem was to just make this all relevant to public employees. And I have an A15 amendment that I'd like passed out. And Commissioner, could you come up to the table, please? Mr. Larson, yeah. I want to have a discussion with you about this. And Representative Manziel, can you come up to the table at the same time? Bill, give these guys both the copy of the amendment. We've had some discussions with some of our union people about the fact that employees and employers aren't really in tune with what kind of communication that the employees can have in regards to union information that's being disseminated at the workplace, whether it be on the computers or talking on the telephone or whether it be posted on the wall in the break room. And so we're trying to, this is actually an attempt to try and solve a problem that appears to exist within the communication between the various organizations, and try and set some parameters for how much communication, when and where the communication can happen, and also allow the employer to discipline any employees who violate the rules. I understand the issue of the preemption from the federal law, but I do know that it doesn't apply to state employees. And Commissioner, can you comment on if we change this to just public employees as opposed to having everybody apply to everybody?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the definition public employee given meaning under 179A03 sub 14, without looking at the statute, I'm not quite sure if that's, you know, that there is a definition of what constitutes an employee, and I guess I'd have to look at sub 14. I'm at a loss right now as to what you're...
Just everybody.
Then it would be all public employees?
All public employees,
okay.
Yes.
Well,
how would this not be a good thing?
Well, Mr. Chairman, my name is Paul Larson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Employee Relations, and I've dealt with the labor management issues for probably 30 years of my career in here, and primarily all of it has been with the state. And we do have, I think, a very good working relationship with the state employee unions. The advent of technology in our workplace has certainly been a challenge for us, but it was no different than when we had telephones. prior to that. And the concerns that we have about this bill is that the the state employee workforce, the public employee workforce in general, is a civil service concept where you apply for a job, you are selected by your skills, knowledge, and abilities into the job. And one of the systems about civil service in the merit system is it's free from any political influences. And while this has been somewhat of a challenge with the advent of public employee unions, I'm pleased to say that at least our state employee group in the workplace is relatively free from those political influences. The concerns that I have about the bill is that it doesn't define communications, it does, and it's overly broad. It says, letter, brochure, advertisement, email, text message, or similar means pertaining to union business, labor organizing, and so on. As I see this bill, if this language were to pass, you could walk into a state office, for example, and if the union had a billboard that they published for their members, who the endorsed candidates for the office would be, that could be in the receptionist's office. And we would get complaints about that, and we don't allow that now. We also are engaged in union organizing activities. We have DCERT campaigns, and that falls under the jurisdiction of the Bureau of Mediation Services. Now, we do provide information to the unions. We provide the names of an employee when we hire them. We also provide the bargaining unit, whether they're assigned to that bargaining unit. We provide them with their home address. And so we provide them with the information for them to contact those employees. But I think that the big concern that I have would be the erosion that this has in our civil service concept of trying to have a workplace that's free from political influence on both sides of the aisle. I must tell you that. A lot of the unions that I work with have their own websites, and a state employee can go in and access their websites and read updates and read information. We do have a reasonable policy in our work setting that does allow the unions to, for example, all our appeals to arbitration are appealed electronically to us. We allow certain types of email messages. But the unions, I think, have taken the relationship that we have seriously, and they don't go beyond that. Now, for example, this fall we're going to have a presidential election, and we're going to have a lot of other elections there. And what I typically do
I think, Commissioner, we're trying to help you with that problem, because what I think this bill is trying to do is for you to develop rules so you know when and where you can't communicate with union people. But Representative Rucavina, you had a question.
Okay, great. Well, not to Commissioner Problem, to Representative Anfeld, what were just some examples of what the complaints were by ask me when you were asked to carry the bill?
Representative Anfeld.
Well, thank you, Senator Tom Sloney, Representative Rucavina, for the question, and members of the committee. First of all, this has nothing to do with political influence. Certainly has nothing to do with civil service rules. Certainly has nothing to do with any erosion of the relationship between workers and employers. What it has to do with, in response to complaints by public sector workers in state agencies, municipalities, school districts, and county units of government, as well as townships, in response to those complaints, this would require employers, public sector employers, and bargaining units to sit down and talk about the issue and craft some rules that would govern communication electronically, primarily, in the workplace, primarily regarding employee activities, employee social activities, the language doesn't envision political influence or political work at all. And it would be governed by rules that would be agreed upon in collective bargaining and would be posted for all of the workers to understand. It's got a remedy section. The grievance procedure would prevail if there were allegations of violations of the rule. I don't think there's anything for any employer in the public sector to fear here. Clarity through rules seems to benefit everybody. So, with all due respect to the commissioner, that would be the position of the workers and the bargaining unit.
Up there with me.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, do you have a response to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I would disagree with that. I mean, we do have, on occasions, issues with regard to the communications that the unions are sending, but generally speaking, we have, a very good understanding with that. But, you know, the technology now, let's say, for example, if the union sends out an email message to one employee in an agency of, say, 6,000 people, they're beyond their union. The system sometimes can be set up. So it goes beyond just their union. It can go, here's the endorsed candidates for office. And that employee can forward that on. They can send it to every employee in that agency. They can have members, fair shares, or whatever, and we don't think that that's appropriate in our workplace. And we're very strict about that for either whatever election there is.
I think, Representative Andrews, I was the author in the Senate, and you were the author in the House, and I think that's exactly what we're trying to get at, is that those kind of things be governed, and everybody know exactly where and when they can do that kind of stuff, and that people agree to it, so that if an employee does act improperly using state equipment and endorsing or utilizing union equipment, that they could be disciplined, and that this law is trying to put something in, or this amendment is trying to put something into effect that will actually help the relationship between the unions, the employees, and the management. I see him, Representative Murphy, you have a question?
Well, I thought that was in the rules, that you couldn't do that.
That you couldn't use state equipment.
State equipment, state time to do that.
Well, I think the commission would agree with that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy.
It's in the House policy.
I guess...
Well, I think, Commissioner, you have some rules. What are your rules right now as far as your policies as far as workplace communication?
We have our work rules that we allow the use of our email system for certain union activities in accordance with the provisions of the applicable bargaining agreements. We've actually negotiated this language. We have bulletin boards. It can't be partisan. It can't be inflammatory. It can't be derogatory against management, and so forth.
To that point, then, Commissioner, isn't exactly what Senator Adzels and Senator Thomas Owens,
well,
in the amendment, is trying to do here is to get... county and the cities and schools to negotiate a policy, just like you just said you have.
Well, quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I question why we even need the legislation in the first place, because this is something that would be something that the union could bring to the bargaining table, and it should be something that brought to the bargaining table. I don't know why they're bringing it here. Now, how do you describe letter, document, brochure, advertisement, text message, or other means pertaining to union business or labor organizing? I mean, that is so broad. And we have people that we get complaints that they're getting the email messages. And so, while I suppose we can have the reasonable rule, it just seems to me that this is an opportunity for more arguing. And if a union, we've negotiated, years ago all we had was bulletin board in the workplace. And we negotiated.
And life was
with
much better then.
Right. It was. It was. But the technology now, I mean, we can, you can have an employee that literally can send out 5,000 email messages, and we are very careful with these communications. And I don't think this legislation is needed. And I think, quite frankly, we're going to have more problems than we've ever thought of.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With all due respect, what you just heard is there are allegations of improper behavior due to lack of clarity on both sides of the issue here. You have management complaining about the workers communicating with one another in an inappropriate way, and we have workers complaining about management snooping into the affairs of workers and workers' rights to be organized and workers' rights to communicate with one another regarding union meetings and funerals and activities and social affairs and so on. And that speaks to the need for the language that you have before you, that with the development as equals at the bargaining table to craft rules, you get clarity. And with clarity, it seems to me that issues on both sides will dissipate rather quickly, assuming both sides as equals can craft the policy.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm kind of puzzled too as to why, given what you said, Commissioner, why you oppose it. But I see that there are people here from the league and the counties, and since the state says they have negotiated this with their public employees, maybe we could ask them to come up to the table and see if they've negotiated something similar.
Mr. Chairman, Assistant Commissioner, in your opinion, is what they're asking here still against the federal law?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I understand. I have not followed the federal, some of the recent decisions that have been made. But first of all, I can speak with enough confidence that the legislature passes the laws that apply to the employees in, within their jurisdiction. We have no authority to pass legislation that would apply to employees under the National Labor Relations Act, and that's where the issue of workplace communications has been dealt with.
Representative Gunther, it's
thank you,
my
ma'am.
Understanding that it's, the National Labor Relations Law does not apply to the public employees, but go ahead.
That's correct. So that could be fine. My next statement is, without this law, the employees have the right to bargain for these rights that we have in this bill with the various bargaining agents that the employer have or the state has.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I would say that the workplace communications would be a term and condition of employment for which the unions could bargain over.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Okay, I'll withdraw the A-15 amendment and put out the A-16 amendment. Mr. Johnson, would you come to the table, please? Mr. Johnson, you heard all this discussion. In fact, you were involved in a lot of the negotiating here. Give me your take on this now.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'm eagerly awaiting the A-16 to see what surprise it is it might hold for me.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is there a specific point on this you'd like me to address?
Well, it was my understanding that after talking to some of the absentee people that the issue wasn't so much with the state, but it was more with the local units of government. And I know we heard the commissioner just talk about the fact that there's some negotiations already in place at the state level that could be construed to be applicable to this particular bill. Obviously, this bill came forward because somebody's got a problem somewhere, and something's happening that's causing consternation with somebody. I know you helped with the language a little bit to get it to be less onerous as far as you were concerned. Right now, what the A16 amendment would do is it would make the law applicable only to local units of government. Any comment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, first of all, we would start off by saying the League does strongly support working through the collective bargaining process with their unions to resolve these kinds of issues. It's done wherever we have labor unions, we have bargaining. And if this is an issue that that bargaining unit wants to include, they can do that. It's one of the things that has to be worked out between the unit and the employer as they work through their contract. And many places do that. Almost all employers these days have employee manuals that include electronic communications requirements, you know, what types of communication are appropriate and not appropriate in the workplace, what types of pamphlets can be distributed, what you can hang in your office space and what you can't. That's not unique to any local unit of government employer. I think most employers have found that that's necessary both as an employment condition to prevent hostile and threatening workplaces, but also just as a standard practice of business. The concerns that we have in here more deal with how it particularly can apply. I don't think we should be separating out local units of government. I don't think we have any special level of wrongdoing to the point that only local units of government should face an additional restriction on what type of communication is allowed in their workplaces. And I think we can resolve this through normal bargaining. If you want me to go into specific language in the bill, I certainly can, but throughout our work on this, we have strongly suggested that collective bargaining does work on this if it's an issue raised by the union as something they need.
Is there some specific language in the bill that you object to that if we took it out, you would like the bill?
Mr. Chair and members, I was trying to make a joke about lines 1-3 through 128, but
I figured that's what you're going to say, but I did throw the softball.
We had an awful lot of time to sit down and work on specific language to identify exactly what the specific problem is people are seeing and how specifically we can make sure that some sort of individual problem is not happening, that's fine. But to just kind of blanket say all communication must be allowed in all places, there's some language in here that, you know, I think when we're...
Chair. Representative Anselton, to you. It's obvious that there's been some kind of communication problem, and would there be anything, any opposition to clarify in public labor relations law here in Minnesota that that workplace communications is a negotiable item, and does that help at all?
Representative Rukavina, yes, it. Frankly, it would help. Also, frankly, not quite as much as this.
I know, but
it would clearly indicate to both parties that communication in the workplace is
a negotiable
good thing.
Yeah, I mean, if we could just put into public relations, like Pella law, that, you know, workplace communications and identify it as, electronic communications, not excluding that, is a negotiable item for public employees.
Representative Rukavina, one possible flaw in your suggestion is there are public sector merit shop situations throughout Minnesota local units of government. That is, groups of workers without any representation at all.
Well, then they should organize. Simple. That's why you organize. So we can say, you know, for those public employees represented by a collective bargaining unit, that nothing in Public Employee Labor Relations Act prohibits negotiations between employer and employee regarding workplace communications. It's probably not as strong as you'd like it. It's probably not as strong as my former committee administrator, Mr. Lechtel, back there thinking. I can see when he thinks, I can see smoke coming out of his ears. And, you know, but it gets us started, and we'll have to come back and look at it. Because right now, the governor, you know, is threatening to veto the higher education policy bill because we put a couple of labor representatives on there that he can reject, by the way, and he's still going to veto that, and I'm just afraid he's going to veto this entire bill if we, even though we've compromised to what the concerns were about, not having any jurisdiction with federal law. We compromised on that with these two amendments, but it looks like it's always the same thing, you know. The governor keeps, at least the people representing him, say, do this, do this, do this, we do it, and they just, the goalpost gets further away all the time. So, I don't know. Is there a way council can write something up like that? And
Mr. Chair, and
we can get out of here.
To Representative Rukavina's comment, I think wording it similarly to how you just stated it, that nothing in state law prohibits the negotiation of communication rights through collective bargaining. Something to phrase it in the negative like that works better than trying to list every case that the employer is prohibited from.
Please be sure to insert electronic, however.
Yeah. Commissioner Larson, could you give us your opinion on that? Is that too draconian on our part to think that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I would acknowledge that all along I've taken the position that the communication would be something we bargain over. As I told you before, we give the list of that. I don't see this changing our state's position regarding the policy that we have. We have language in our labor agreements that has language about communications, which is defamatory, demeaning, and so on. And we limit our communications to the posting of announcements and so on.
I wouldn't be able to talk around here, right?
So.
That's probably a good thing. So, Commissioner, you would have no objection to the language that said something to the effect that nothing in state law would...
I think I can read it. How about this? Nothing in Minnesota Statute Chapter 179A shall prohibit collective bargaining agreements that include provisions related to workplace communications as defined in Subdivision 1. And then the definitions are there. And then the rest of it from line 1.14 on would be dropped.
I would ask that you suggest that it's a permissive subject of bargaining that the parties can bargain over rather than it is mandatory subject.
Well, it says nothing. It doesn't say it's mandatory. It says nothing in Minnesota statute shall prohibit. Okay.
Does that work?
Staff understands then what it would read, and then and all the committee members. We would just go down the ones in the bill difference in the amendment.
Trustee.
Do we have a deal?
Just go on down.
I don't know.
Right, just public and clear. So the ones in the amendment with that language.
You read your suggestion again. This was good. I think Minnesota State Statute Chapter 179 shall prohibit collective bargaining agreements that include
provisions related to workplace communications as defined in Subdivision 1, which is what you see here on this amendment. Then
we'll just be using Clause D, right?
No. You have to use the public employees. You have to define, because this is only for public employees now, so we don't get with the federal preemption. Oh, okay, got Collin House. Let's vote. We know what it is.
Okay.
I move that.
Everybody understand it?
Okay.
Any further discussion? We've done all the favors.
All right.
Aye.
Set back. So. Anything else? Here, I'll move the bill as amended.
Is there anything else we got to do?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill as amended with the authority given to staff to make any technical corrections that need to be done.
Okay. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. What is the rest of the motion for closing up the bill?
Meeting adjourned.
Meeting adjourned or?
Board, Bob.
Get better about it.
Robin, the meeting adjourned.